Hey everyone, Brian from All Day Rockoff here, and today I've got an interview with Kevin, where we talk about the GORUCK Double Heavy event. Completing a double heavy is a huge accomplishment. That's completing one GORUCK Heavy event, which is 24 hours. And then shortly after that, think 1 to 3 hours, starting a second 24-hour GORUCK Heavy event. It's a lot of time on the feet. I would say that accomplishing one heavy is a huge accomplishment. Completing a double heavy is a giant accomplishment. Kevin has completed 2 double heavies so far in his GORUCK career. So I'm just thankful that he was able to take the time, come on here and talk to me about those events. I have a lot of questions for him around training, around finding time to train for something like this, around the whole why. Why would you sign up for a double heavy and then a second double heavy? What did you get out of the events? I mean, they're just such a mystery to me because there haven't been that many of them. I think up until this point, there have been 5 GORUCK double heavy events, and they've all been custom events. So there isn't too much information floating around, and GORUCK hasn't been promoting them because they've been obviously custom events. If you're interested in the heavy, the double heavy, or just into this other side of GORUCK events that are even more crazy than the traditional events, then I'm sure you're going to love this episode. Thank you so much for downloading this, subscribing, all the support, and I really hope you enjoy the All Day Rockoff podcast, episode number 112. Again, thank you so much for downloading this episode, for subscribing. Truly, truly appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who supports through Patreon as well. That's awesome. I appreciate you all. And I really hope you enjoy this interview with Kevin. Today, I'm talking with Kevin, and I'm really, really excited to have him on because we're going to be talking about GORUCK double heavy events. Not only has Kevin completed 2 double heavy events, but he was pretty close to the second one since that one happened so local to him. And I'm just really excited to get into these, especially since it sounds like GORUCK will be putting on some official GORUCK double heavy events in 2020. So Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks, Brian. Yeah, appreciate the chance to talk a little bit about the double heavy.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time, and thanks again for, you know, kind of bedding your schedule and making this work. I really appreciate this.
Sure.
Before we get into the double heavy events, I'm really curious, when did you start doing ruck events or get into GORUCK? How did you kind of get into this whole thing?
I guess I probably learned of GORUCK maybe 2013, 2014. Frankly, I was just looking for a good backpack, right? Like some people, that's maybe how they stumbled upon it.
That's how they get you.
Yeah. So they get you in there. You know, I was doing a good bit of travel internationally. I was looking for a backpack. I bought a 40-liter GR2. And I noticed the events from the website. I didn't actually get around to doing my first event until 2017. Took a little bit of time there, you know, work and life. And I kind of come from a different endurance background. Racing dirt bikes at the time quite a bit, mountain bikes, doing some cycling, that type of thing. And, you know, I couldn't really figure out how to fit in whatever this event was, but it was kind of sitting there in the back of my mind, you know, what's the tough about, basically, right? So it was about 2017 when I was getting more serious about, okay, I've been thinking about this thing for a while. And from that point in time, it actually picked up, you know, another ruck or two, right? As often happens with folks. And I stumbled on ruck workouts at MLCF, Moulin Labe CrossFit, and basically the whole CARC organization, the Cleveland Area Rucking Crew. So that was really the catalyst that kind of, you know, got me into, okay, this is what this GORUCK stuff's about, what the events are like, and then was able to, yeah, jump into a tough in 2017, kind of early in the year.
So you completed that first tough event. I mean, you've been kind of been following GORUCK for years and years up until that point. Did the event kind of turn out the way you expected it would, or was it a little different?
You know, maybe by that point in time, because I was, you know, I was working out with a group of folks that had done some events, I probably have a little bit better knowledge of, you know, what I was getting into at the time. But you guess you really never know, right? Because every event's a bit different. That first one, that first tough was in Columbus. And we just had a lot of weather that weekend, like it's another Memorial Day event. Actually, we had a big rainstorm move through and we just got pounded for, I think, most of the night, you know, just heavy rain. And we ended up moving a lot of miles, you know, for a tough. I think we went, you know, a little over 20 miles or something like that. Certainly there was some, you know, there was some good PT. I remember some stuff during one of the pretty heavy rain periods there. But that probably influenced a little bit of, you know, how the event unfolded, right? At times we just probably kept moving just to try to take shelter from some of the rain we were getting into. So that was a, you know, it was a fun event. It definitely got me hooked into, okay, I want to do some more, right? I want to try some other GORUCK stuff. And I think I did maybe one more tough later in the year, and then had the opportunity to jump into heavy here in Cleveland area. The Moog heavy was going on, so jumped into that event and actually had a really good time doing that too.
So you did your first tough, you came back, did another one, you must have enjoyed it because you signed up and did a heavy. And then from there, is that when you first heard about the double heavy, or kind of how did that whole process happen? Because I know up until, you know, recently, they've all been custom events, so the word doesn't always get out until they're over.
Yeah, right. So actually, the I did that second tough, and maybe the way it works for a lot of people is similar to this. You know, you had some friends kind of talk you into the next thing, right? So for me, that next thing was, well, hey, in about whatever it was, 4 to 6 weeks, there's a heavy, it's in the area. You know, you got to come do this heavy with us, right? So again, that same group of friends that I've been working out with, several of them were associated with that event. So I thought, okay, good, we'll go do that. And that turned out to be a pretty awesome experience too. It was definitely next level from the two toughs that I'd done previously. It was, you know, it was a Moog event that always kind of brings with it, you know, some maybe unique challenges. That event was, Kadri Bellman was involved in that, Kadri Cleave. We did just probably the most epic welcome party I'd ever envisioned, right? And that's probably what really got me excited about, okay, the heavy is definitely interesting, and it's a good challenge. So on the tail end of that event, Brian Singlin from Park Organization here locally, he's really the one that kind of got me interested in this double heavy. He's the one that let me know about it and got me plugged into that group. Because as you said, it's a custom event. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know anything about, you know, double heavy type events, but that maybe gave me some confidence, you know, having someone who was, that I knew really well, you know, a good friend already affiliated with that group, is that, okay, this sounds like something good to jump into, and that's the next thing to give it a try.
Yeah, I could see how some, you know, motivation from someone who's done quite a few events could help push you over the edge and get you to sign up for it, because if you're searching around the internet, you're probably not finding too much about a double heavy.
Right. Yeah, it definitely wasn't on my radar until kind of that, you know, post first heavy high, right? Of like, yeah, that was awesome. What's that next thing out there? And often a good friend plugs you with, you know, plugs you with that next thing. It was, you know, the same thing riding bicycles, right? You do one event and, you know, often it's your group of friends that drags you to the next harder thing, gives you something to train for.
Absolutely. So when Brian kind of, you know, gave you the idea of going for that double heavy, I mean, how much time was there between
when you completed your first heavy to when that second, you know, that double heavy was set to take place?
So I think I had about 6 months or so, because that other heavy was in the fall. It was maybe kind of coming into the first of the year that he started talking about it. So I knew around Memorial Day, you know, I probably had, a pretty good chunk of time, you know, maybe as much as 6 months leading up to it to kind of get ready for it. Not that I exactly knew what to do at that time to get ready for it, but I did feel like I had a bit of time.
Yeah, that can be a double-edged sword sometimes, because you've got all the time in the world to train and then all of a sudden you don't.
Yeah. Sneak up on you.
Yeah, that's happened to me a couple times. So training for the double heavy, I mean, you mentioned you kind of didn't know what to do to start, but did you end up changing up your training schedule at all between what you're doing for your first heavy and the double heavy?
Well, yeah. So actually, it was probably about that time, that kind of that late fall coming into Christmas time frame there, first of the year, that Brian was getting going with the heavy drop training program. So I think I jumped into the second round of that and, you know, started kind of building, whatever I was going to do to train for the double heavy kind of off of that program at that time. Certainly some rucking and, still running, a bit of cycling, those types of other activities that maybe I was already doing coming into the first heavy. Just really tried to augment all that stuff with some of the heavy drop workouts. And I know you know quite a bit about that because you've been plugged into the program yourself at one point in time. But that's a pretty good additional base that you're adding, right? That's a lot of volume. So
yeah, it sure is. I've gone through two rounds of it and it's been a ton of fun. It's been good.
Yeah, fun, right. and it gives you some structure too. So, that like that concern you mentioned about, does the time slip away, or, certainly that can happen. But what's nice with now I'm going to do these workouts this week, I'm going to do these next workouts this next week, and, working with a group of folks there, and then it helps with that structure piece and helps you kind of, work that in so life doesn't get the best of you.
Absolutely. So when you were training up for that, how many, hours a week would you say that you were training? Because it sounds like you had your initial program and then you were kind of supplementing with heavy drop, which I think the last time I tracked heavy drop, I was, maybe doing 4+ hours or so of work just from that.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably 4+ hours for just the workouts. And then you add, some rucking to that, some running. What I've done, I guess, for both of these, last two events is tried to augment in some longer runs. You're going to spend a lot of time on your feet. I like doing trail running anyways, so I've done maybe one longer trail run a week. So that might add, 2.5 hours, maybe a little more there. And I tried as I got closer to that first double heavy to really start to incorporate maybe some more like coupon rucks. I found that if I was going to go out and try to do a ruck, I was going to try to carry something with me, right? Because that's what's going to happen during the event, right? You're going to be under a lot of weight for a long time. And honestly, that was a little bit of advice from some of the others in that first double heavy group that, had a bit more experience already, was, don't short yourself on doing some coupon rucks. So I did try to, try to incorporate some of that. So maybe that might add, another hour or two in addition to whatever that other base is. And then you've always got like maybe a random, 12-mile time ruck that you try to get in, that type of thing occasionally as well.
I mean, the event is called the heavy, so it makes sense you'll carry some heavy stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I've got to ask, because not everyone in the community is fond of running, and a long running distance for someone who's not fond of running can vary between someone who's in the trail running community, because I know those people can go out there for, you know, a nice short 15-mile run, and it's kind of no biggie sometimes. So I'm curious what your definition of a longer trail run is that you would get in on the weekend, like how many miles and.
Yeah. So I've got a group that I've run with for a number of years, just Saturday morning run. And that's maybe not all year long, but definitely during the winter months, I try to get there and try to get that run in. And it can be anywhere from like a 10 to maybe 13 or 14 mile range. Maybe it averages about 12, but it's a different run every week. We're down in the Cuyahoga Valley National Park area, so it's a little hillier. I mean, we're in Ohio, so you know, we don't have big mountains, but that's probably one of the more, you know, terrain-rich features, right, that we have getting to that area. So, you know, maybe 10 miles there, but you're going to run some hills, and you're going to be on a trail, and you're going to be in the mud and cross some water and that type of thing. So it's time on your feet, right? And I think that time is good crossover-wise, right, for the rucking events.
Yeah, and I think trail running in particular can benefit you when you're training for GARC events, because when you're out just running the roads, you can kind of get lost in an audiobook or in a podcast or, you know, in some music, because you're on sidewalks and you know it's going to be flat and for the most part safe. When you're out there trail running, right. I mean, you got to watch your steps, especially the location you're at. You've got to, you know, watch your footing. It's more similar to a GARC event where you don't want to twist an ankle. You don't want to, you know, step off the curb weird. And so your mind has to be in it for the most part, unless you really know the trail you're on. But it sounds like you're doing different trails pretty frequently. So I'm guessing your mind's working out there too, not just your body.
Yeah, you're definitely watching out and, you know, looking for good foot placement and that type of thing on the trail run. And I like the fact that the trail's not maybe beating your body up quite as much as maybe those equivalent miles out, you know, pounding hot pavement, right?
Isn't that funny how that works?
From a longevity standpoint, I think that's good. Yeah, definitely.
I don't have any degrees in anything related to fitness or body or health, but for some reason, I feel like when I do trail runs, my muscles are sore from going up and down and just, you know, because it's a softer thing that your foot's landing on. And I ran a marathon a number of years ago that went on this road called the Viaduct out by us that had, I mean, tens of thousands of cars every day would go over it. So it was solid concrete. And I remember I had to tape my knees up afterwards. I had these giant bags of ice on each knee. And I was only on there for 8 miles, but it banged my body up worse than a 20-mile training run that was kind of off-road. So it's weird how that concrete can destroy you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I do maybe a small amount of running on the pavement throughout the week. Maybe like a run at lunchtime or something like that. But those are short. You know, those are a couple miles, maybe 3 miles, and maybe only one or two of those. So I do look forward to the, you know, getting out in the woods and, getting on a trail where you're, as you said, you're sore afterwards, but maybe not so beat up from the joint standpoint that I think can really turn a lot of people off, right? As they start getting into trying to augment some running as part of the training, and you're out there pounding the pavement and then your knees are hurting, and then you start this, you know, bad spiral where you just can't get back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one likes going backwards, so taking days off doesn't feel good, and then running less doesn't feel good, and you're always trying not to, you know, it's just like you said, it's a spiral. So it sounds like you did just a number of different things to train up for this double heavy, a little bit of everything. You did trail running, you did rucking, you carried extra weight, you did heavy drop training. When you got to the double heavy and you're going through that first one, did you feel like that was enough?
I guess with the double heavy, it's, and maybe any heavy, it's hard to ever feel like it's enough, right? But if I try to dissect it a little bit, and I certainly did before I got to the second double heavy, the thing that maybe I wished I'd have done a bit more of was just again, time under weight. And not so much necessarily rucking the distance, but just trying to, you know, spend more time, you know, on some longer coupon rucks and just getting a little bit stronger in that regard. And hopefully trying to ease up that amount of suffering that you're going to feel. You know, you're sure going to suffer, right? It's going to happen when you're, you know, working with a team and the whole team's under the weight and, you know, there's just nowhere to hide from it, right? But the longer you can, you know, delay some of that, to me, that just meant, okay, maybe I try to bring a little bit more of that into the training for the second time around.
That's a great way to describe it. You know, you're going to suffer no matter what. I mean, it's a double heavy, right? There's no way out of it. So just kind of delaying and decreasing the amount of suffering.
Right. That's probably that's the best indicator. Right? Just if you can delay it a bit, then, okay, good for you. Then maybe you're a little stronger, able to help out a little bit more, that type of thing. But everybody's going to suffer a bit. That's part of the deal.
So I don't want to dive, you know, too much into the details of the double heavies because I'm sure they'll be different every time around and all of that. But I'm curious, when you finished the first heavy in your first double heavy, were there people who dropped off after that? How was the group feeling? And then the follow-up question to that is, were there people who just signed up for one of it, or was everyone in there for both double heavies?
Okay, so let's see. For both events, there were some individuals that just planned on just the first one. Now, you probably know this already, but what's a bit unique about the double heavy format is you don't get to add anybody new. That's maybe the part of it, honestly, that I kind of enjoyed the most. Right? That's what's unique. That's really what to me, one of the bigger challenges is that whoever you start with, that team has to finish whatever the work is. And that team's got to finish that work together. So, both events have, you know, some planned drop off in terms of, who's doing the first and who's doing the second, but that group that starts the second together, you're definitely hoping that you keep as many of those folks intact, right? Because that's it. That's your team. And at that point, nobody's fresh. Everybody's got an entire heavy, you know, under their belt, getting to that point. I think we had, 15 start. This is true for both events. Believe it or not, it was 15 was the number for both of the second heavies, both the 2018 event and the 2019 event. We had 12 finish the first event, and we had actually all 15 finish the second event. So it's a relatively small group, right? In both cases, maybe we were closer to high 20s to 30, somewhere in that range, that did the first heavy.
That is a small group, and that's... I can imagine that can be kind of tough to plan for. I'm not sure how many people, you know, said they were interested in the event, but when you're putting on one of these custom events, for anyone who's done that, heavies are expensive to put on. And I can only imagine that a double heavy would be just, you know, double at least the cost of a single heavy.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely a lot of work goes into the planning. You know, I wasn't maybe as close to this event in 2018 in Nashville. I mean, the event went really well. It was, you know, well put together, you know, awesomely run. So I know there was a lot of planning, but being kind of local to this event here in 2019, maybe I get a little bit more sense because there's more people helping out just kind of from our local community, you know, getting plugged in to, you know, help support the behind the scenes type work. So I know Brian and the cadre for that event, they put lot of effort into getting that second custom double heavy to happen.
So when you completed that first double heavy event, were you in your mind thinking, if another double heavy came around, I'd do it again? Or are you thinking, man, this was kind of crazy, I'm glad I'm done?
I guess I was probably thinking, well, I'm done. You know, it's a one and done. That's cool. That was a great event. You know, maybe the internal justification for why to get into the first one was really just about, hey, it's a big challenge. I want to go do it. I want to try it. I want to see what it's all about. And again, kind of coming out of that first heavy, I was maybe a little bit on a high there, just really enjoying the heavy format. But yeah, coming into the second one, probably more thought went into, well, you know, why am I going to do this one? What's it about? And frankly, that all just boiled down to, it's a good group of friends and a good group of people doing it. And there's no way it's going to happen in my backyard, and I'm not going to be involved in it, right? I definitely want to get out there and, you know, do some work again with that group of folks. So, you know, as long as it was going to happen, I was going to do it, but I probably wasn't going to like fly to some other part of the country and go do another one just for the sake of doing it, right?
Yeah. So you didn't finish it itching for another one, but you also weren't incredibly turned off from them, because when one came and, you know, the stars aligned, it's your friends there, it's like, I got to be there too. You weren't just, you know, trolling, searching, looking for the next custom double heavy to join up with.
Right. Right. I mean, maybe some are, but I think most probably do that type of event thinking, okay, that was good, and I'm going to take a little break, right? Or I'm going to find something different. Or maybe that's not the right way to think about it. But they were so close together that even after finishing that first event, if I was thinking to myself, hey, that was cool, I'm going to do another one of them someday, right? I wasn't thinking someday was like, you know, 10 months later or something like that. I think it ended up being maybe 11 months or something. But I mean, it wasn't very long before we were right back into, okay, time to start training for the next double heavy.
So there are a lot of people listening, and I've gotten this question on a number of previous episodes where people are very curious how they can fit training for some of these bigger events. And in those cases, usually it's either a heavy or sometimes an HTL. But I mean, for a double heavy, it's got to be a bit more training. And so people are curious how they can balance that with, you know, other obligations, whether it's work or family. I'm curious if you've got any tips or any ideas on how people can train for a bigger event like this and kind of keep things in balance, or if that's, you know, even possible at all.
That's a good question. Certainly, you know, making sure that you get the training in, but you know, you're not going to want to short the family time, right? That's much more important in the big scheme of things. That's important. So, you know, it sounds simple, but planning, trying to, you know, work out a schedule. I do a lot of the heavy drop stuff in the morning. So maybe I'm hitting that earlier in the morning before I go to work, trying to get, you know, that kind of base amount of training in. I'm doing maybe a little bit of rucking, you know, where able to kind of, you know, incorporate stuff, you know, with the family. That makes a lot of sense too, right? I'm fortunate that my girlfriend Heather really actually is from the same type of rucking environment. You know, she's done some tufts, some lights, you know, and does the Thursday night ruck workouts with me at MLCF, right? So we've kind of got that working to maybe our advantage a bit, that we can spend some of that time, you know, doing a shorter ruck together. I think that's helpful to maybe find a way to try to make that creative and fit in some of those like bonus miles, right? Because it kind of all goes in the bank for training.
Absolutely. And I mean, ever since my daughter was born, I've been, whenever I take her for a walk, I'll just grab the ruck too, because I figure if I'm going to be out there walking, I might as well be out there rucking. So
yeah,
it might just be a mile, but if you, you know, or two, but if you do that 5-6 days a week, you're looking at an extra between 5 and 12 miles, which isn't nothing. It's all time on feet.
Right. Right. And if it is just a mile or two, what I found is just make it a heavy one, right? Just load up a little bit more weight. It's it's maybe only a mile or two, but that's helpful. I'm pretty fortunate to be able to do some workouts during the week around my lunchtime with work. I got a local YMCA that's pretty close, so I'm able to kind of pop over there. Those aren't elaborate workouts, but you know, it's a little bit of base type stuff, right? Whether it's just a short amount of running or maybe even a little bit of swimming, whatever I can fit in, and then, you know, pop back to work and get back at it. And, you know, that kind of shorter time span, but that helps too.
And it's interesting. I'm pretty busy. So I'm not able to get some of the big, you know, the longer runs or rucks that I really enjoy getting in. But I found that if I put in, you know, 3 to 4 miles on a run in the morning, and then I go for maybe a 3 mile run at lunch, that feels on my body, you know, the equivalent of maybe a single 10 mile run or something, because your body hasn't fully recovered and you're kind of, you know, beating it down just a little bit more again after again. So if you're getting those, you know, those workouts in the morning, and then even if you're doing something lighter on lunch, I mean, it goes a lot further in both, I think, in both how it impacts your body, but maybe also even building some mental toughness. Because once, I know a lot of people think, you know, I got my workout done for the day, it's time to eat and relax. But if you get your workout done and then you're 6 hours later, you're going out there again, it's kind of a different mindset.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point. I think it's definitely helpful to build that, you know, that additional time where you can, and it doesn't have to maybe be super heavy, that, you know, that extra auxiliary thing you do, right? You just want to find stuff complimentary. I don't love swimming, but I love that occasionally I can get in the pool, maybe one day a week, maybe 2 days a week, if I'm just too sore to maybe want to do something else, right? If I had something really heavy in the morning and I know, okay, that's probably good, you still can jump in the pool, do a little bit of swimming. You're not beating your body up at all, really. You know, builds that base a bit. Plus, it's just a good mental break some days, right?
It is. So when I was training up for my first heavy, it was back in 2013 or something, but the cadre had told us that we were going to be doing a lot of swimming during the event, that it was BD and we're going to be in the water a lot.
Yeah.
And we ended up, you know, during the event, we ended up doing, I think, 7 or 9 water entries. And then one of them, we had to bring snorkels and we had to do 1,000 meters with our faces underwater. And so I had no idea what we're going to end up doing. So I joined master swimming at my local Y. And I found that it was a nice break from everything else I was doing, but it also allowed me to build some mental toughness trying to, you know, swim an entire length underwater and trying to, you know, just hold your, you know, you can make it, but your body's telling you not to, and just pushing through that.
Right.
I found there were some, you know, some tricks with swimming that could help in other ways that for GORUCK that I kind of didn't realize going in. So it's cool to hear that you do swimming as well. That's really cool.
Yeah. You know, a little bit. I don't come from, you know, that type of background where, you know, I didn't grow up really competitively swimming as a kid or anything like that. Right. Or don't have that high school or college type swimming experience. So I'm not fast at all, right, in the water, but put some effort into maybe trying to learn the proper technique to swim. Believe it or not, it actually helped in a GORUCK event for me as well. That second tough I did was the Put-in Bay event, the custom event that you know, was put together, and we spent a lot of time in the water. I think we spent about roughly half of the 15-hour event doing different things in the water. You know, not always swimming, but there was occasionally some swimming. And of course, it's, you know, it's night and it's cold, and so having a little bit better technique there actually did transfer over.
That's great to hear. I mean, not that you spent half the event in the water, but that you're able to translate some of that swimming over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess I should preface that I, you know, never did any swimming growing up. I mean, I did swimming lessons when I was in elementary school, but nothing competitive. And I just kind of had that mindset that, well, I mean, if I've done GORUCK events, then I can probably get in the slow person swim lane at a, you know, at the Y
right.
and figure it
right,
out.
Right.
And that's
figure it out. Yeah.
That's what I ended up doing. So it's, if there's anyone listening and they're interested in trying swimming, the master's stuff, at least ours was, it was, you know, free, and it was also really laid back, and everyone was really interested in helping you learn form. So I learned way more about swimming than I ever thought I would. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah, cool.
So just plug the Y there, I guess. And the ones that have the master's programs. So the second heavy, I mean, you signed up for it because it was in your backyard. You've got a lot of friends doing it, and you can't, you're one of those people who can't sit on the sidelines and watch this happen so close to home. How involved were you in the planning process for that event, or kind of, you know, seeing it being planned? Because it sounds like that first one might have been, you know, a little bit further away or outside of your close group of friends. So it sounds like you might have been closer on that second one.
Yeah, I would say not, like, not directly involved, for sure. Just, you know, again, with it being in the area, you know, I knew that that Brian was putting a lot of work into pulling it together, right? Even just kind of the marketing of it is difficult, right? When you've got a custom event and you got to get so many signups and you got to hit certain dates and milestones, you know, there's a lot of effort goes into making, you know, kind of making all that happen. And there was quite a few shadows that kind of came from the local Cleveland group here that were, you know, on deck to help out, right? So I didn't necessarily know what they were going to be doing, but I knew that anytime you've got, you know, 10 plus people that, you know, I routinely, you know, kind of see week to week at, you know, other ruck workouts and such, they're, you know, getting involved in the support, you kind of get some sense of like, okay, there's quite a bit going on to put this together, right? There's going to be a lot behind the scenes. And of course, we don't, as participants, you know, because we were in it from the start, we don't really know, those of us that were doing the event, what exactly is going to transpire until we get there. But we definitely got the sense that, okay, there's a good bit of work going into the planning. There was in the, you know, in the message group, the Facebook group, a few indications that the event got closer from the cadre on, you know, a couple of things that might be going to happen, or, you know, there's a land nav aspect to this second event. So that, you know, that portion of it was something that was pretty well known, not necessarily where we were going or what we were doing, but, you know, the basics of what's transpired with some of the other land nav events. Shredder was good to post a few things to kind of help the group start to learn some of that. And, you know, not that anybody had to learn any of it before the event, but, you know, if you wanted to get a little bit more familiar with your compass, basically.
And that's nice that they let you know that a little bit ahead of time, because, I mean, heavies can go either way. It can be really heavy, it can be really long, it can be both, but you don't always go into them thinking that I should figure out how to use a compass.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, I definitely enjoyed the land nav aspect to the event because it was different, you know, and we learned a lot of skills throughout the, you know, throughout both periods, right? Both heavy periods there. So
when you were getting to this heavy event, the second double heavy, so you've already completed one, you know, kind of the toll it takes on your body, how difficult it actually is. Were you nervous getting to the start point, or are you just excited to go?
You know, I think everybody's always at least a little anxious, right? Maybe not nervous, but, you know, you're anxious for what's going to unfold, and, you don't necessarily know, cause everything's always different. But having said that, I mean, most of the time, once you're in the middle of some PT or, you know, you're 10 minutes into it, you're just into it, right? And then you're on that, you know, on the path there. So I think going into the first double heavy, the thing I was probably most concerned about was maybe feet and maybe just overall length of time, right? I had some international work travel experience, so I'd been awake for like that 30, 35 hour range before, but definitely not, you know, well into what was going to evolve with the second double heavy, or the second heavy, you know, the second portion of it. And definitely not with all the physical aspect overlaid on top of it. So that was maybe some uncertainty there. And then, like I said, feet, you're always worried about the feet and what's going to happen. Coming into the second double heavy, I could kind of check the box of, okay, my feet survived. I know what to do to take care of the feet. And I'm confident now with the duration of time. But honestly, my back took a pretty good beating, just the abrasion from the ruck. That first event in Nashville, it was hot that weekend. It was hot, it was humid. We weren't, you know, wearing a lot of layers, right? You're just wearing a shirt, and half the time the shirt's soaked. So coming into that second double heavy, if there was anything maybe rolling around the back of my mind, it was, I got to try to avoid getting so much abrasion from the ruck, just rubbing back there for so much time.
Yeah, and that was going to lead to my next question. Was there anything that, you know, you learned at that first double heavy that you made sure to bring to the next one? You know, any changes you made in training, or anything that you realized happened to your body that doesn't happen at the shorter events, like a regular heavy?
Yeah, I did definitely from the physical aspect, I did a better job trying to tape up the lower back. And it was a little colder for this second double heavy at the end of April, you know, in the Cleveland area still. It's not overly warm out yet. So we were wearing, you know, more clothing. So maybe that helped as well. But maybe the other big lesson learned was the time. Between the first event and the first heavy and the second heavy during the 2018 event, I kind of had it in my mind that, well, I've got about 4 hours, you know, because that was maybe the advertised time. But what it really amounted to was about 2 hours by the time we were actually done. You know, when we finished index the first heavy, we had about 2 hours. You'd be ready, you know, back at the start point for the second. And I was parked maybe 25 minutes away, you know, 25 minutes when I was fresher anyways. So by the time I got back to my truck and, you know, taped my feet back up and, you know, did a parking lot clothes change and, you know, tried to eat some food and, you know, kind of get refitted, man, I just didn't have a lot of time. I got back to the start point and I think I had about 15 minutes where I literally just kind of laid on the concrete, closed my eyes, and then it was time to go again. So maybe the big lesson learned going into the second one was I tried to cut my prep time down to, if we got 4 hours-ish, you know, plus or minus, great. But, you know, I want to be ready to go if it's like an hour or less, right? So just how I kind of set my gear up and, you know, what I was going to eat and, you know, just the amount of food. That first event, I just literally didn't have enough time to eat as much food as I probably wanted to. So I had all the food. I just, you know, not enough time to get it down. So
that's a really good lesson learned. That's a tough one too, because I mean, I'm guessing that you're moving pretty slow, you know, ish after that first one, trying to get everything in order and figure out where everything is. So having it all in one spot and, I don't know, maybe labeled or just kind of organized probably helped you out a bit more for the second double heavy.
Yeah, definitely did. I think I just had maybe too many things to choose from during that first, first event. I mean, things were mostly in one spot, but I just didn't have enough time, you know, to worry about like all the things I had packed in the cooler and, you know, all the different variations of what I might need for clothing and all that. So I probably streamlined a lot of that for this second event and, you know, was able to turn it around a lot quicker, which just really allowed for a little bit more time to rest, which was the point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's two 24-hour events slammed together. So anything you get in the middle able to rest is, I mean, probably just does wonders for you. So for gear, I'm curious, did you bring a, you know, like a full second ruck for the second event, or did you just bring stuff to refill your current one? I'm guessing you did a full swap on clothes.
Yeah, I did a full swap on clothes. I did a swap on shoes. I certainly had like water set up ready to go, so I could just kind of, you know, dump that in there. But the second event, we carried quite a bit of water with us because we were, you know, it's a land nav based, trek based type, double heavy. We're going to spend a lot of time in the woods. We carried extra water. So we had two water bladders, so 6 liters of water plus the Nalgene, you know, plus the weight, you know, plus the all the other odds and ends, normal stuff. I just actually needed like a full 25 liter rucker to fit everything in, and I just have one of those. So it really wasn't an option to switch rucks. So what I did is I just kind of had all the individual gear set up, ready to, you know, swap out, you know, what I needed to be ready to go for the second one. And actually, like you said, things kind of labeled because, you know, what makes sense when you're wide awake is not what makes sense to you when you're, you know, 26 plus hours deep into it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. Sometimes when I'm labeling my stuff, I'll come up, you know, I've got nicknames for the certain types of protein bars, the ones that, you know, that are good for when, you know, you're kind of feeling bad, and the ones that are, you know, kind of fill you up. And so sometimes I'll write those on there, but then when you've just finished up I haven't done double heavy, but I've done back-to-back toughs and I've done tough lights, and, you know, you finish a 12-hour event and then you're halfway through the next event and you're, you know, kind of, you haven't slept, you're kind of tired, and you're looking through your pack and you're like, what does this even mean? Like, this, why can't this just say what it is? And so you thought, you know, I've got times where I thought I was being, you know, kind of funny and tricky when I was labeling it. But then when I got into it, I was like, man, I'm such an idiot. I should have just put peanut butter protein bar, done.
Yeah, exactly. Just simplify, right? Like that was maybe the, if you encompassed it all and just, you know, the shortest thought necessary, right? It just simplified the approach for that second one. So I could move a lot quicker during that in-between period.
That's great advice. I didn't even think about that until you brought it up. But yeah, that is just awesome, awesome advice. And so it sounds like the second double heavy you did had some really unique components. And I know we're not going to get into them because of, you know, the kind of the secretive nature of it. It was kind of more land nav trek based, you know, the event that never happened. And I'm guessing that the double heavies Gorok puts on, if they end up actually putting them on in 2020, won't have those features. I bet they'll be a little more traditional. But I just kind of wanted to highlight that I think it's really interesting the kind of things you can do with custom events. And so just as kind of a general question for that second heavy and your second double heavy, that was, you know, a little more unique. Did you find that was something that you would probably only find at a custom event where the organizer had worked closely with the cadre who were putting it on?
I think probably yes and no, right? Try to explain the overall arching theme of it. Probably that all came together as part of the custom, right? So we went from the first heavy that was land nav based. We learned a lot of navigation skills. In the second heavy, we continue to put those things into practice. The cadre, Shredder and Cleave and Wild Will, all three of them, they all had different elements that, you know, they provided some skills training, you know, along the way as we went through both the land nav portion and then the second more trek-based portion, which honestly, I don't know a lot about the history of that. I know that term's been around for a while. It's just, you know, kind of all predates what I know. The part that's maybe a yes, that's more similar to what I think you could get some other events, based on what, you know, the other GRTs would explain why we were there. some of the things we were learning, the skills, maybe crossed over to things that people had learned in like a constellation type event, or, you know, certainly the other land map, but those types of more unique skill sets that we got some demonstration on. Maybe different elements of that do exist somewhere else in the more traditional type environment. And I don't really know that for certain myself because I haven't done a constellation.
That's pretty, I mean, constellation events are pretty unique events in their own right. If you've done a light or a tougher, the more traditional style GORUCK events, and you show up to a constellation, it's definitely not what you're expecting. So to see some of those elements incorporated into your custom is pretty interesting, pretty cool to hear about.
Yeah, I thought it was great because, throughout the entire duration of the event, we did learn a number of things, and then we put them into practice. We just put them into practice under a lot of weight, right? With a load, with a team, all that traditional heavy type, heavy type stuff that you would expect to get. So that made it interesting, while still being physically challenging.
That's really cool. And I mean, having it being a custom probably gives the organizers that kind of control over to incorporate some of those. And if you're, just showing up to a heavy event, it really is a roll of the dice of what you're going to get. But running it through the custom makes it so that those things will more likely than not, whatever you're asking for will happen.
Yeah. And I thought as we went through that event, it definitely was, it built the whole time, right? We did smaller movements and smaller skills exercises, especially in the land nav portion. And then, we kind of built on that. So it somewhat culminated as you went through the course of the entire duration there. And then, the last bit that, as you said, is maybe more of that trek-based or scenario based portion. There's a good number of pictures and there's some AARs out there. Probably a blow by blow of that is not best because you want to leave that stuff for the next group. But was quite challenging. it was definitely interesting. It was different. But actually it was some of the more physically demanding and maybe mentally demanding portions of the whole, 2 days, I thought. So, it was definitely worth waiting for.
And it sounds like it's something that you would probably enjoy quite a bit because, I mean, based on your history, you've got, your biking, your running groups, and now you're doing GORUCK events. You've got this whole, wealth of training and interests leading up into it. And so it sounds like you're kind of the person that enjoys new things and enjoys different things, which is why you haven't just stuck to one thing forever. So I'm guessing that was kind of fun to get introduced to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely enjoy, trying different things. And what's really unique with these events is the group, right? You're working with a pretty unique group of individuals always, right, at any GORUCK event. But I found both these double heavies, like what a solid group of people that participated in both of them, right? When you think about a team, really strong teams emerged out of, both of these events. So that's what's different than some of those other things you mentioned, right? While you get to do those other things with your friends, you're maybe not in the, that same, you got to figure it out as a team type, situation, like definitely the double heavy, right? Cause of what we talked about, there's just no one new coming to help. So where you start's where you got to finish together.
The team you start with is the strongest, and most rested the team will be at the entire point of the event. There's no one coming to relieve you.
Right.
So you've completed two double heavy events. I'm guessing when you signed up for that first double heavy event, you were not thinking about signing up for a second double heavy event. And now that you've signed up for and completed a second double heavy event, Is there any chance that you would do a third, or are you pretty well and done on those?
I don't know. I guess I'm curious to see what evolves in that 2020 calendar next year with maybe that more standardized double heavy, right? The non-custom, or the ones that GORUCK is talking about putting together. I wouldn't rule it out, but I'm definitely kind of caught in the period where I'm thinking about, okay, what's the next thing for 2020, and admittedly haven't got it figured out yet. I've got one more event here in the Cleveland area, another heavy to do at the end of the year here near the fall timeframe. So there's a few more things on the calendar I'd like to do. There's some bike stuff. There's an Xterra coming up here. So I'm kind of focused on that near-term stuff. But yeah, maybe like a lot of people this time of year, just starting to think about what's the next year look like.
Yeah, we're kind of in an interesting part of the year, right? Because almost half of the races have come and gone. And I mean, the traditional racing calendar, because not everyone's out there running or riding bikes or doing their big races in January. But GORUCK's still putting on events. But it's kind of that time where you're trying to figure out, your final maybe a race or something for the year. And then you're just kind of starting to look at 2020, because events are, maybe signups aren't up yet, but some of those bigger ones you have to sign up day of, or tickets sell out. So it's I don't know. It's always interesting figuring out when you start looking at the next round of events.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's kind of the mode I'm in right now. Starting to look ahead a little bit further on the calendar, and at the same time try to enjoy the last few bits that want to fit in for this 2019.
Absolutely. So the double heavy, I mean, it must not have been a horrible experience for you, because you came back twice, and it sounds like you're even open to a third one, depending on how interesting GORUCK makes it. And I mean, KARK is such a big crew, and you guys usually pull a lot of signups. So even if they put one within driving distance of you guys, I mean, it makes sense. There's a lot of rock clubs in that area. So who knows what happens?
Yeah, it's definitely, both events were great experiences. Both the challenging mental aspect, and actually even just learning a little bit from the first one and trying to bring that into the second one, as well as, they're always physically pretty demanding and pretty cool. So I would definitely be an advocate of people giving it a good hard look if they're really thinking about maybe a double heavy or looking for something different. I think they're more attainable than probably what people might otherwise think. But in the same time I say that, I guess I'd also say, but you definitely got to train for it, right? it's so that's a nice combination, right? Of if you do the work, it certainly can be attainable for folks.
I got into running about the same, maybe a year or two before I got into GORUCK events. And so it kind of seems like the heavy is, kind of the marathon distance, and then the double heavy might be the 50 miler distance, because there are people out there who can, with minimal training, go and run a marathon, and they're definitely the outliers, but it's possible. But there's very, very few people who can just kind of go, I've got a decent fitness base, I'm just going to pound out 50 miles. It's definitely something that you have to train for.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great analogy. You got to put in dedicated work to train for, but it's not out of reach, right? With that work.
And those are sometimes, the best feelings, when you put in a lot of dedicated work for something and then you finish it. I mean, I know when I put in dedicated work for things and then finish it, I feel better than when it's an event that I'm like, oh, I can do that. I've got time in my day, and it's just a whatever. And you go out and finish. It feels like a lot of that buildup and the training just makes it that much sweeter when you do finish it.
Yeah. It's the whole plan coming together at that point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I wasn't crazy. I wasn't an idiot. I did this.
Yeah, sure.
So is there anything that we might have missed? I mean, I think we covered a lot. We started off with how you got involved in this and started doing events. I mean, we briefly talked about how you got involved in that first double heavy and then why you signed up for the second one. We talked a lot of tips. I mean, I guess one thing that I might have forgotten to ask is, we covered it a little bit, but if there are people listening and, you know, the double heavy is intriguing, it's not, you know, so far out of grasp, like maybe selection where you have to put your life on hold to train for it. So I think it's going to be intriguing to a lot of people. Do you have any recommendations or any, you know, advice for people who might be on the fence thinking about if it comes up in 2020, if they'll sign up or not, or anything, people who are just kind of curious about the event and what they should do?
Well, yeah, I think what you described is pretty accurate. At least it would feel to me like, yeah, selection, that's next level. And maybe that's a much different balance that you've got to work out. That doesn't mean that training for a double heavy doesn't have its own set of challenges with getting the time in, but with enough time on the calendar to maybe assess where your starting point is, yeah, it certainly feels like there's a path there that you can put together to train up for it. I'd like that, I'm probably a little biased, but I actually kind of like some of the PT stuff that emerges out of some of the events. And maybe that's the thing I like most about the heavy is you've got time in a heavy event. And because of that, you do find yourself maybe running a little bit and, you know, whether it's the older traditional, you know, push-up type work, or whether it's, the new Robbie Miller type, both sets, there's good PT work that kind of comes out of it. Those things are going to put you in a place where you probably want to be comfortable with, you know, hour plus workouts at some pace, right? Not the fastest pace that you can possibly muster, but you want to both mentally and physically be prepared to, you know, put in a chunk of time. Maybe you're going to do that multiple times, but you want to be able to knock an hour off the list. So I think in addition to, you know, we talked a little bit about just trying to do some rucking, and, you know, we talked a little bit about running, and I think that's all good base. Mentally, when you kind of assess how an event's going, you know, you can tell when folks are more comfortable with, okay, we've been at this set of 8-count bodybuilders for, you know, 45 minutes in this muddy field, but, you know, some people are smiling more than others. And I think that's maybe as much mental with just being comfortable with, you know, getting uncomfortable with an hour plus long workout at a time. So I think those blocks, as you think about planning for them physically, are important to try to find. And maybe that's enough, right? Maybe an hour block here or there, if it's a good hour, you know, the right hour is perfectly fine.
Yeah, a lot of it, at least with the training I found, is how you spend it, because it's when you're going out there running, if you've got half an hour, I mean, if you're running it at a 6:30 pace, you end up a lot different than if you're running it at a 9 pace. So working out, you know, doing sandbag workouts, doing that kind of stuff for an hour, it's not all equal. So I think the way you spend right. You spend it really matters, and work on those weaknesses, I guess, because there are certain, I mean, you've done heavy drop. There are certain workouts in there that you just hate, or at least personally I do. They're ones that are really tough.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And going back and doing them over and over and getting better at them because of the harder ones, and making them, you know, turning it from a weakness into, I'm not going to say a strength, but into just a not weakness that can go leagues at events.
Yeah. I've occasionally talked with different folks about like the running aspect. I get that a lot of people don't like running, in kind of that, you know, go ruck event community. But the way I look at it is if that is a weakness or something you just don't enjoy, we're not really at a running race. So just building a little bit of that into the base, if that is something you feel is a weakness, can really work to your advantage. All these double heavy events, we've actually had some element there where maybe especially the first one, we did quite a bit of running. And you want that time to not be so brutal, because that's one of the rare times when you're not under a load. So, you know, you don't have to be fast. You just want to be a bit more comfortable with it, right? So that's a good point you bring up.
Yeah. And it also goes back to building mental toughness, right? I mean, what's a good way to do that? It's to do things you don't like for an extended period of time. Not everyone likes running. You know, this might sound bad. Well, I don't know if it sounds bad or not, because this is the an okay audience for it. But personally, cycling to me is one of the most boring things to do. And, you know, just road yeah. cycling. And so when I was training up for, I did a half Ironman once. And so I would go out and do 30 mile, you know, 35, 40 mile bike rides. And it was just, I hated them so much. But I found that pushing through, going out, you know, you know you're going to subject yourself to hours of things that you don't enjoy, that actually helped me for GORUCK events. Because like you said, you know, 45 minutes of 8-count bodybuilders, if Cleve's got his deck of cards, you can always throw out there, well, at least I'm not spending 4 hours on the bike again. Kind of puts it in perspective a little.
Yeah, you got to have something to balance it off of, right? You're probably not a fan of the indoor bike trainer then, based on those comments.
I spent maybe 50 hours on those things training up for that, because I would hit the Y at when they opened. I think they opened at either 4 or 5 in the morning, and then I would get on the trainer until 7:30. So I would spend hours a day, you know, hours a couple of days a week at a time on the trainer, and it was just horrible.
Yeah, that can be pretty mentally challenging, but it does cross over, right?
So it does. I can endure a lot now.
Yeah, exactly. If you're head down underneath a log and hating life a little bit, you know, you got that perspective. So
yeah, you know, at least when you're under a log, you have someone to talk to. Someone else is there.
Exactly. At least you got a buddy.
Mm-hmm. Those hours alone on the trainer in the morning were just brutal. So as long as I've got someone else to share the suffering with me at all, it all works out. And that all just harkens back to what you're talking about with the teams you meet and do these double heavy events with. The people who sign up for them they're just a little bit different. They saw a double, you know, they not only saw a heavy and said, yes, I'm going to do that, but they saw two of them in a row. And they're like, that sounds like an okay thing to spend my weekend on.
Yeah. It's a little bit different, right?
It sure is. Well, I just want to give you a chance, of course, too. Is there anything else that you want to talk about? Any shout outs you want to give? Anything else before we wrap up?
I think we covered a lot of it, Brian. I think those were some of the same, you know, some of the same things you talked about and asked about, and some of the same thoughts I was thinking about there. So certainly would maybe just parting thought, I appreciate all the work that everybody put into both of these double heavies, putting them together. You know, I know that it's a lot custom event, right? Both for the folks putting them together, but the cadre as well. So it was evident in both of these experiences. There was a lot of places where in that amount of time, you could have found stuff just not coming together, right? But as a participant, I don't think any of us noticed any of it. It was great.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast. This has been episode number 112. You can get to the show notes, which have links to a number of things we talked about, at alldayrockoff.com/112, or in your app's show notes if you're listening to this through a podcasting app. Kevin, thank you so much for taking that time to be on. I really, really appreciate it. And I got a ton of information from this. I'm sure the listeners appreciate it as well. If GORUCK decides to add the double heavy to the calendar, I know there will be people out there who want to train up for it. And you gave some solid advice. So thank you for all of that. If you enjoyed this episode, I would truly appreciate it if you'd take a couple minutes to leave a review on either Apple Podcasts or on Facebook. You can search for All Day Rock Off. That helps out a ton, and I really, really do appreciate it. If you want to support the podcast by other methods, there's the All Day Rock Off online store, alldayrockoff.com/store. And currently there's Patreon, patreon.com/alldayrockoff, or there's a link in the show notes. I really appreciate you for downloading this episode, for subscribing, for all that support. And I wanted to give a special shout out this episode to David for supporting through Patreon. Really, really appreciate that, man. And I just wanted to let you know that. Thank you all again for everything. And I can't wait to talk to you next Thursday. This has been the All Day Rock Off podcast, episode number 112. And as always, don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive and drink hard, rock harder.